It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Welcome to the show. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of racing going on this weekend. I'm so excited about our guest today. Hall of Famer Shane Carson is going to join us today. So I am so looking forward to talking to Shane, one of my favorite people, one of the great race car drivers in his day. Shane Carson's going to join us here in just a little bit on the show. Got a lot of talk to talk about. I don't know where to start, Austin. There is so much to talk about. And I don't know if I start with the incident with the World of Outlaw official. Should I start right there with that? Is that where we should start with it, Austin? Would you agree with that?
Might as well.
So let's talk about this official getting into it with the crew member. And you told me that was one of Tony Stewart's crew members, right?
Yes, Ayrton Olsen.
Ayrton Olsen. So what did you feel about the incident? And when they were pushing the car off of the racetrack, they get into the wall a little bit. They get it off the wall. They start to push it back a little bit more. I don't know if it seems like that mule might have got into the nose wing just a little bit. It didn't look like it tore it up too bad. But then he gets into the wall again, and then the crew members come up. They pull the car off the wall. They push it back into the work area, and then the incident takes place. Can you fill me in a little bit on that, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right on what happened. I mean, Sheldon stops at the top of two, and the work area at Cedar Lake, so you exit off of one, and then on the following on the end of the banking, at the bottom of the hill, you take a left, and the left goes through one and two down through both corners, then it turns to the left and catches on the back stretch. So from where Sheldon stopped to the work area, it was a long trip around, and at that point, there was no guaranteed time left in the work area, so
right.
He was just better off getting, you know, rolled backwards. These cars aren't designed to be pushed backwards with a four-wheeler or a side-by-side or a mule.
How much does the nose wing hang over? Does it hang over the bumper just a little bit?
It's 20 inches past the leading edge of the front axle, which puts it about an inch maybe over. It's right there on it. So if your four-wheeler bumper or side-by-side bumper is like small and your hood and like the nose is kind of set back from the bumper, you won't get into it.
Right.
But with the Outlaw ones, they're pretty much straight faced on the front, so you're going to get into it if you push the car forward. And the front bumpers we don't build these cars to run into people. So we have a very small front bumper, so they don't take a whole lot of force.
Not a very sturdy front bumper is what you're saying.
No, and I mean, right. Like I said, they're not designed to. It's not a stock car. We got big tubing. It's just
right.
We got a little piece of 3/4 inch tubing, and that's it.
Yeah, so. So, do we know what he said to the official? Has anybody found that out yet? Has anybody heard what the commotion was between the two of them?
No, but if you watch the video, so you see Sheldon getting rolled backwards with the side-by-side in front of him, and the car hits the wall the first time, and then he hits the nose wing, and at that point, you see, I believe it was Ayrton, that walked up, you know, kind of next to Sheldon and was saying something to the official, and then a couple other crew guys followed through. What he said, we don't know. And then after he's done talking to the official, the car hits the wall for the final time, and then
with the right rear tire.
Yeah, and the crew that was standing there, including Ayrton, grabbed the rear bumper, and it got the car, jumped the car about a foot and a half over just to get the car off the wall,
right.
And they were able to roll the car in the work area. And at that point, we don't see where the Outlaw official went. And now, you know, the Honsel crew is working on the car, and Eric is just kind of standing there in the background, and you're out of nowhere. It's like a WWE match out there, and he
crazy.
Just comes out there and just smokes the guy. And all it's if you watch it, it's, you know, the Honsel crew guys, and they never missed a beat. So that was, I don't know.
They just kept working.
Yeah, I don't know what their thought was, but I mean, yeah, I mean, official, that job's not easy at all. Trust me, I know firsthand. You know, my family owned a touring series, and I couldn't tell you how many times we were in incidents where teams were mad at us and all that. And
right.
You got to have thick skin, and that's stuff you just got to deal with. But I guess, you know, that was his breaking point, and, you know, it's going to, you know, affect him for the rest of his time with the Outlaws.
Let me ask you this. Should the official be fired?
Yeah.
That's a slippery slope because you don't know what he said to the official to agitate him, right? He could have said something really degrading to the official. And you know, people lose their minds sometimes when people say things to him that they shouldn't say, right?
Right.
So do you think that the official should have been calmer in that incident and should have never done that? Or do you think that he should be fired? Your opinion.
I think he should probably let go. It's just you're an official, you have higher authority, and you should be able to take, you know,
a little lip service.
You should, and I get you. Nobody wants to be, you know, yelled at, accused of, or, you know, just put down. But I mean, it's the heat of the moment. They don't know no better. And you just gotta take it. You know, if you can't take it, you're in the wrong sport and you're doing the wrong job. It's just what happens. I mean, you and I have been both in a position where we've had our battles with officials.
Right.
And you know, how many times did they lose it and come after us? So I mean, it's, you know, he probably should have known better not to do that. But, you know, at some point, maybe this was an incident that's been going on for a while.
Right.
Maybe, you know, he's got into, those two have gotten into it in the past.
Maybe they've had words in the future, in the past, right. Let me tell you this. I'll tell you a quick little story one time, and the official got fired. I was at Lakeside Speedway. It was about 1990, and they just hired a new competition director, T.J. Giddings. And TJ is a very accomplished racer, had a lot of success racing around this area, and I like TJ, to be honest with you. But this particular week, I was giving him a little lip service after he made a bad call on another driver the week before, and it could have affected anybody. And so I was kind of giving him a little lip service, and all of a sudden he comes down off of the stand where he was doing the driver's meeting and chased me around like he wanted to fight. Well, all I know is at the end of the night, before the end of the night, he was relieved of his duties. So I'm going to say, yes, he probably should be relieved of his duties.
And the Outlaws did put a post out on Twitter that they were, you know, reviewing or investigating the situation, and we'll make a decision, you know,
right
here in the future.
Rick said something here, Rick Smith, in the chat room. He said, is that the same official that turned the side-by-side over a couple weeks ago? And Chris answered with the answer, yes.
Yeah, at Lawrenceburg, they were firing the cars off, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but yeah, the side-by-side was turned over on its side, and I'm not sure. If it's the same guy, if somebody did say yes, then I'll take your word for it. But
right.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure personally, but yeah, tough. If that's the same guy, that's a tough month and a half for him.
I think anybody that is in the right mind would know that if you are representing a series as an official, that you have to have some thick skin, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you said it just right. You're representing the world of Outlaws. The Outlaws aren't going to want to keep somebody around that's going to, you
right.
know, taint their image, right? And I definitely think that, you know, this might not be the last time maybe he has an incident with somebody, and maybe it's not the first time, you know? And
right.
it's to that point where we know he's not a good fit for the Outlaws, and he's not doing the Outlaws a good service. And trying to better the sport, and, you know, it's just time for him to move on to go somewhere else.
Marie says, and welcome back, Marie. We are glad to see you back here on the Most of the Motorsports chat room. He didn't handle professionally, or should be fined or fired. I don't think you can find a guy, do you, that works for you? I don't think you can find him.
I you're either getting fired or
you got to be relieved of your duties.
Yeah, that's the only option.
I think so too. Yeah.
The Owls don't do anything or you're getting fired.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but listen, if it was me and one of my employees got into it with one of the crew members of a team, they would absolutely be relieved of their duties. So just so you're watching, just so you know. All right, let's talk a little bit about what happened this last weekend. Brent Marks ends up winning PA Speed Week. What do you think about that? No surprise there, right?
No surprise at all. It's just I saw a deal that Brent posted. He was one spot away from making history and doing he almost made the impossible possible by winning, I believe, five races during Speed Week. Was it five or six races during Speed Week? But still, I mean, he came off and dominated, you know, Pennsylvania Speed Week, and I'm not surprised at all that he's the champion of Speed Week at all. And I saw someone's comment on social media today that, you know, for a long time we talked about, you know, Sheldon and Anthony Macri being the best cars in the nation right now. And I think, you know, those two are kind of, you know, surpassed by Brent Marks. I mean, look what he's done this past week. And he's really turned around from the past couple of years. So we talked about it before. It's just something clicks and they find something, you know, as a team, and he clicks as a driver, and it's just that perfect match. And he's just going to, you know, dominate 2022 for what it's worth.
It wasn't even close. 253 points between him and Justin Peck.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's anytime you do that. I if it's the same point structure-ish as, you know, what I'm used to with ASCS, it's probably not. But, you know, it's 150 to 1 in ASCS show, and it's like 60-ish or so points maybe to start. So, I mean, he had to have just... I mean, we know what he did. It's just crazy to think that he has that big of an advantage in a week of worth of racing.
Yeah. Jake Buback, he picks up the win at Waukini. I think the biggest story out of that race with the Luxor ASCS National Sprint Car Tour is Wayne Johnson. He gets upside down on the first lap of that race and destroys his race car. He is scored last, and that gives Blake Hahn the point lead of with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour, 41 points. I think, wasn't he like something like 50-some points behind it at the beginning of the weekend? And now he's a 41-point leader with the National Tour. What do you think about that?
Yeah, not a good night for Wayne. You know, he came back to the Tour and he fired off really good. And he had, you know, pretty good speed at Devil's Bowl, Little Rock. And then they came up to the Midwest and he was good. And at some point, you know, the bad luck strikes and it got him in a big way here. It pretty much wiped out everything Wayne had. I'll pull some pictures up of the car. But, I mean, the front end's, you know, it needs a new clip. I mean, I bet you just take the parts off of it and just set it off to the side. But, yeah, not a good night. I think it even broke the block on his. Yeah, he's.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
It pulled the block off the motor plate. And I don't know if it broke the block or not. But, I mean, definitely it. Waukini, with it being a half mile, I mean, that place is just, you know, fast and it'll bite you in a big way. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, the track was pretty good on Friday night or Saturday night. And when Buback won, I saw a picture of his rear tires and they looked pretty good. But, you know, it took him four times to get the race started on Sunday. And, you know, Wayne was one of the issues with it.
You got a little frustrated watching the broadcast, didn't you?
I did, but... it just it took him four times to get the race started, and at lap five of 25, it took rubber, and everybody was just, you know, fall leader around the middle. But
right,
really glad I didn't go. I hate to not be there and support a $5,000 win show, but right. You know, I like to keep my tires sitting at home and good equipment. But no, I mean it's unfortunate because that track usually puts on good racing, and it's just maybe we need to look at the schedule and get them to be at a different point in the year, maybe make it a fall show or a spring show where we can get a good race at the track and really show. I mean, that's you're not really showing the full potential of Waukini. Saw last year in August we had a really good race and the track wasn't that bad. So maybe it's a point where we look at the schedule next year and we put them at a different point and try and get a good surface to race on.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a tough assignment there for Wayne Johnson. Now he's going to have to dig himself out of the hole. I tell you, a guy that's really impressed me with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour is Jason Martin. He's a rookie. He's third in the points. He's 56 points out of the lead right now. Are you impressed by what Jason Martin's done so far this year? No?
I'm not. You know, people were kind of surprised to see him run that good, and I'm not surprised at all. I think he's doing a great job. I just, you know, he's been around it for a long time. He's raced all types of different things. Like I said, we talked about it a little bit last week. I believe he ran with the kind of Gum Out series for a while, maybe ran with the Outlaws, and then he has plenty of 360 and 305 experience around the Midwest, and he's just, he's done it forever, and he has a ton of experience, and he knows how to be consistent. And he had three top fives this weekend, and then he was good at I-70, had a top five, actually I think a top three.
I think he was fast qualifier too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
On top of that?
And so, I mean, that's
coming off of a concussion, by the way.
Yeah, and that's four races after a big wreck that he's had, you know, really good, consistent runs. And that's what it takes to win championships and be a contender. Look at Brad Sweet right now. Brad's won one race and has been in the top 10, top five all year long, and he's leading the points with a good lead. So, you know, I think, you know, it's you capitalize on issues like this with Wayne, and, you know, that's what. And you capitalize on issues like that with Wayne, and then you can just be consistent. And that's
right.
It's all going to work out at some point. It's just, it'll run its course, and at the end of the year, it'll probably be looking good for you.
You know what? It was fun for me to see Zach Blurton pick up his first Lucas Oil ASCS National Tour win at Waukini as well. It's always fun to see a guy win his first national race, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And, you know, I was kind of surprised to see. I didn't get to watch any of the heat racing or qualifying of that. I tuned in for part of the feature, but I was kind of surprised to see Zach up on the front row. I mean, he's has plenty of experience, you know, in the Waukini area and kind of Kansas with the Rebel Series and his 305.
Got a lot of laps around Waukini.
He does.
Yeah.
And he used it to his advantage. And, you know, Blake had a shot at one of the starts and got, you know, to him and by him. And then, you know, he's been around a while and he knows what not to do when someone capitalizes on yourself. But, he just, you know, he was right place, right time when the track went locked down and he was – He had plenty of laps there and an experience, and he knew what to do. So it worked out pretty good for him.
Yeah. Hey, you don't have that video queued up at that road racing wreck, do you?
Let me get it pulled up.
All right. I don't know if anybody's seen this wreck. These two, they look like enduro cars racing on some kind of road course. And it is one of the scariest wrecks I've ever seen. A driver gets ejected out of his car after he hits a tree and a safety vehicle just off of the road course. And it is one of the scariest things. All right, can you play this for me real quick, Austin? I want people to see this. This is the craziest. Have you ever seen anything like that? Now, I want you to replay that again, Austin, because I don't think it took me, I had to watch this three or four times to get my head around what just happened there. The guy in the other car, in the blue car, gets ejected out of his car, flies over the roof of the car that he gets in the accident with, and lands in front of the safety vehicle right there. Now watch this again. Is that the craziest thing you've ever seen? Now, why would anybody go out on a racetrack and not have their seatbelt on? The guy started to move around a little bit. But for me personally, I don't know when that wreck happened. Somebody said that's an older clip. But let me tell you, that's one of the scariest things I've ever seen.
I have no words to speak on
right.
on any of that. I mean, like I said earlier, it's foreign racing. They do things different. I mean, you should have a seatbelt on no matter what you do, or seatbelts, but yeah, we take no credit in him being a homelander, but
oh my gosh, scary.
I don't know. I'm glad I'm not in his position right now is all I can say.
Yeah. Caleb says, I'd really like to see the ASCS National Tour at RPM in Hayes and then a show in Waukini. He also says, Blurton has come up with the United Rebel Sprint Car Series, doing well this year in ASCS competition. He is doing well.
Really well. I forgot to mention, too, when we were talking about him, he had a really good night at I-70, too, with the National Tour. So
right.
That's a good 2 weeks that Zach had, and then, you know, cherry on top with a win. So, you know, maybe we might see him, you know, maybe run more 360 races, maybe commit more full-time to the National Tour this year after that win.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we better take a break. We want to get Shane Carson on, man. He is a great friend of the Racing Boys, has been for a long time. Looking forward to talking to him, the Hall of Famers. So up next, right here on Mostly Motorsports, it's Shane Carson, and it's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products at Works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Sure, especially sportswear in-house. We do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
Three nine-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. And, man, I've been looking forward to this interview. You know, we've tried to get Shane on, and it's been mostly our fault that we haven't had him on. But Shane Carson joins us now on the show. He is a Hall of Famer up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. Shane, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Scott. Yeah, we've had a little bit of drama going back and forth, but today's a good day. I got off that mower and come inside where it's cool to talk to you, so that's excellent.
So how many acres do you have to mow up there?
I got a two-acre lot, and I've got a rider, and I can use it most of the time, but sometimes you got to get off and do the weed eating and the mower around the tight stuff. But yeah, I'm glad to be in the house, and it's cool. It's supposed to be 105 heat index today.
I know it. That's what they were talking about. It's crazy, the heat wave that we've been going through here as of late. But Shane, before we get talking about what happened this last weekend in motorsports, let's talk a little bit about you getting into the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in 2007. What a great honor.
Oh, I'm telling you, you know, when I was first got the call that they were inducting my dad in 2003, you know, I got to go up and accept and be a part of it. And that's really the first time I had really paid attention to what all went down when you became an inductee and the group that you're in with. You know, we've got close to 380 inductees now, but that's over the period of, you know, what it started like in the early, I think, 1990.
Right.
So yeah, it's been ongoing, but you know, that's a great group to be in with.
What does it mean more to you that you and your dad are in there together? What does that mean to you as a son of a Hall of Famer and yourself getting into the Hall of Fame? That has to magnify it up a little bit, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. But, you know, growing up, I mean, I always felt like that he was a Hall of Fame promoter from the get-go. You know, I grew up in that environment and watched how he did things, and I tried to learn from it. And then actually being able to go up and do the induction for him, you know, it was just really good. Pat Patterson and Dave Argerbright were doing the MCing of that.
Right.
You know, they're so good, and they both knew his history. And Pat, you know, was from Kansas City originally, but he spent a lot of time in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And I didn't realize that until we started talking. I said, man, he knows some of those things and the way they went down. So it was huge. And then, of course, me getting the chance to become an inductee and listening to him go over the spiel, you know, he kind of goes over it before you go up to accept. And I'm thinking, wow, how do they know all that stuff? And it was just really excellent for me to be able to go up there and be a member along with the other guys that were heroes of mine for years.
Yeah. Out of all the people that you raced against, or maybe prior to you racing, who was your biggest hero?
Well, I had one in Oklahoma City. His name was Everett Humphrey, and he ran number 12. And that's why I always ran number 12. But, you know, growing up selling programs, I'd wait for those guys to come in the pit gate, you know, in the middle of the afternoon on Friday, and I'd have the programs there. He'd always come and buy a program from me and talk to me, and we were really close. And you know, so I'd say it'd been Everett Humphrey. But, you know, going down the list, I mean, Everett Humphrey, Harold Leap, Emmett Hahn, you know, those guys were just bigger than life, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And being able to be around them throughout my career was really excellent. And then when I started racing, most of them had retired, but I was able to get input from those guys, and because they had been watching my career along the way, you know, so it was really neat to have that, you know, that influence.
Who, Shane, in your racing career, who was the guy that you wanted to outrun the most? If there was one person that you wanted to really beat more than anybody out there, who would it be?
No question, have been Doug Wolfgang.
Yeah.
You know, Doug was, of course, he was the driver of the Trosso cars before I came along. So I followed him into the seat. And then I was constantly trying to be as good as or be able to be competitive with. And, you know, and of course, you know, Trosso would say, well, Doug did this. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not Doug, you know, but I'm going to do my best to beat him. And we did some. I wouldn't say we beat him all the time.
Right.
But I definitely beat him some. You know, that was a major accomplishment for me. You know, it kind of gave me a little bit of something to talk about.
Yeah. Shane, you're still heavily involved with the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us your duties over there a little bit, what you're doing over there.
Well, before I was an inductee, I was on the board of directors.
Right.
And then, that period ran for probably 6 or 8 years, and just learning about the Hall of Fame and how things work, and trying to have some input into how things I felt like could be maybe a little bit better. So that was part of it. Then I became an inductee. Then I became kind of an ambassador for the, for the Hall of Fame. I promote it, everywhere I go. I do things for them on Nationals Week. We have the deal at the Bob Trossel Garage. We do an autograph session that's every day. We do it for an hour, and we have three guys there, and I try to gather up all the guys, which is a little bit like herding cats. I always say that. Because, you got to have everybody's number, and then you got to call them, and they say, well, is that today? I said, yeah, it's here in about 15 minutes. You need to get over here. So I spend that week, worrying about it and being glad when it happens. And, so it's quite the experience. But, it gives the fans, and of course, autograph sessions are all the same pretty much. You got a group of guys, and the fans come down the line, and I get to talk to them a little bit. Our deal in the Trossel Garage, we have only three of them, and they're there for an hour. So it's a little different, where you've got the people will line up sometimes out the door. But, they come up to talk to their guy, and they've been watching him their whole lives, and they've never got to actually be there with him and talk to him. And,
right.
and it gets pretty cool to just listen. I kind of stand back to the side a little bit and see what goes on, and it's very entertaining for them, and for the drivers and the people that I have doing autographs, because they're
right.
I remember Rick Ferkel told me one time, he goes, how did that guy know all of that stuff? And
right.
I don't know,
right.
But they do, and
yeah.
you gotta enjoy that.
Yeah, they've got a great track tribute going on at Ascot Park right now, up there at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame Museum. It's going to be going on through October 1st. They've got several cars up there, videos, driver uniforms, helmets, memorabilia from Ascot Park. What's your memories of Ascot Park? Did you ever race out there?
I raced there quite a bit. J.C. Agajanian was a really good promoter. He was kind of on the cutting edge of getting the drivers in, and he did it a little bit better. He had his own car.
Mm-hmm.
So JC had the 98 Junior there. It was a Grant King state-of-the-art, car. Of course, Jimmy Oskey told me they called it the penalty box, but I never did.
Right.
I always looked forward to coming out and driving that car, and I did that. And after I won that first World of Outlaw finale at Eldora, I got a call from Ben Foote, which was JC's right-hand man. The next week I was in California driving for Agajanian.
Oh, how about
and
that?
And I did that through the years. And, I never did win. We ran third one time for the World of Outlaw event out there
mm-hmm.
in Aggie's car. So it was kind of neat. But I always enjoyed going there, and I learned a lot about, how things were done in California, how the differences in the track conditions and the different things. And they did a very good job with their track prep and stayed on top of it. But, we had the induction weekend here a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and Jimmy Oskey came in for that induction.
Mm.
And, of course, I took him all around and took him into the museum. And his car, his original car that he bought when he was in the Navy, or in the Air Force, I believe. No, I think he was in the Navy because he was on an aircraft carrier.
Okay.
But he bought that original car as a Hank Henry car in the 60s. And that car was there in the museum, and he got to go over and kind of take pictures with it. And he stood around there for a long time telling the fans that were walking by to stories about it, and it was neat the way that opportunity comes about.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Well, Shane, did you get a chance to watch any racing this last weekend?
I did. I tried to keep up with it. I'm pretty connected with the Dirt Vision or the Flow or
right,
whatever
yeah.
I can get on to watch the races that are coming up that I don't get to go to. The Outlaw shows, they do a great job with the Dirt Vision stuff. Sometimes maybe you want to see the behind the scenes stuff, and you get to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that the other day.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's always good to see little packages of stuff that's going on behind the scenes with the teams and the crew members and stuff. That's always an additional bonus. I will say this, that I think that Dirt Vision probably does live pay-per-view as well as anybody out there, in my eyes.
I think so, too.
Yeah. There's a few that I'm not so happy with right now, but I'll leave that alone. I'll just leave that alone right now.
yeah.
Did you see the incident between the official, the World of Outlaw official, and the crew member of Tony Stewart? Did you see that?
I did, and I didn't understand that at all. I didn't know how that happened or what played out on it. I know they pushed the car back in the work area, and then those guys were able to get on top of it and get a tire changed, if that was what it was. And, you know, if you're past halfway, I know there's no time in the work area.
Right.
So you get it in there as quick as you can and give that guy a chance to get back out there. Now, I don't know if they ran over somebody going in or if they maybe the way they pushed it in, I don't know if they wrinkled the nose wing. But
they weren't happy with the way they put the car back into the work area. He bounced the right rear off the wall once. Then the mule come up there and got into the front bumper, and I think maybe did a little nose damage on the nose wing.
Is that what it was?
And then they rolled him back a little further, and the right rear hit the wall again, and then the crew members come out, bounced the car off of the wall, rolled him back into the work area, started working on the car, and that's when one of the officials got into it with the crew member. Let me ask you, Shane, I hate to put you on the spot here, but what would you do in a situation like that? If that was one of your employees that worked for you, what would you do in that situation?
Well, you know, you want your guys to be professional, but man,
you got to have thick skin, don't you, bud? You got to have thick skin.
Yeah, but think about it. They're out there working those events, and they're out there, they're just like all the teams, they've been out there all year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hot, and it's a long drag, it's a grind, and it's hard to not snap at times. I wish that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know, because I know those guys, but, you know, I don't know what pushed him into that situation, but it wasn't good. I don't like it. I don't like the way it happened.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll get it worked out for the next race.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk a little bit about Brent Marks. He picks up PA Speedweek. Man, he just kind of he just stomped him this last week, didn't he?
That guy. Well, you know, you seen him win some outlaw races. I saw him win at Devil's Bowl. I mean, that guy is fast.
Yeah.
He's a good champion. He could be, you know, one of the next champions on down the line.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Danny Dietrich picked up the last win of the PA Speedweek.
Right.
It was good to see him win. He finally finished in front of Brent Marks, who finished second that night, and Justin Peck was third. So, it was just a dominating performance by Brent, really, to be honest with you. I can't get over it, to be honest with you.
I was looking at the finishes. I think he was either first or second, maybe third through every one of them.
He won PA Speed Week by 200 and what did I write down? I think it was 253 points. I think it was something like that. Yeah, that's kind of a little bit of an ass whipping right there.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you usually don't do that against the Pennsylvania guys. Of course, he is one of them, so I guess you know it makes sense. But yeah, you usually don't see that.
Yeah, Brock Zierfoss, he won his first World of Outlaw race in 5 years. It was good to see him win that, wasn't it?
Yeah. I did, yeah. But of course, I watched the end of that race, and he was on it. And Brock is a charger. He really is. He's got the right equipment and the right mentality, and he is on it.
Yeah, Shane, did you have a preference on driving a wing car or a non-wing car? What was your preference?
Well, you know, I mean, I won my first championship with Trossel non-wing.
Yeah,
know, that's how we did it. We didn't really. We weren't expert wing racers at all. We went to Eldora the first time with that Trossel car, and I was showing Bob pictures of it. I said, Bob, that thing's dragging the ground. You know, the wing was just planting it so heavy.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's the way we ran it. We run it that way all the time. So, you know, we had to kind of get better at the wing stuff. We had to work at that. But I think we had a non-wing program pretty well dialed in. I actually liked it better without. But then as racing went on and technology kept up and I got to feel better about running wings, you know, more so. You know, I think there's a little bit of a chance when you do crash, you land on that thing maybe the first time and it helps you out because, you know, that's kind of documented. But
yeah, right. right?
But what? I do like the non-league stuff still. I like to watch them. I like to be around them.
What'd you think about when Knoxville went from non-wing to wing? Were you in favor of that at the time?
Well, it was in 80, at the end of 81. They went to all wings in 92, in 82. And I wasn't running there all the time, but I was running World Outlaw season the full time for 80 in 82, 83. And I know that was a big move for them, and I felt like it was on the safety side. I know that's why they did it, because we had a couple of fatalities right there. You know who they were.
Yeah, right.
And, that was a rough on all of us. And they felt like they was making a move that would, benefit and be on the safe side. So
yeah,
I think it was probably a good idea.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to watch Justin Grant win at Putnamville?
No, I did. I heard about it, but I didn't get a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah. He's got it going on right now. I think Justin Grant does a little bit, right?
He really does.
Yeah.
Justin does a great job with that NASCAR, and they get that thing up front, and he is good to go on those non-link stuff.
Yeah. How many times?
That's funny, though. Some of those toughest competition have switched over to run the wing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've noticed that. One of them would be Tyler Courtney. He's gone.
Right.
The other one would be Chris Windham.
Right.
And I don't know what happened with Kevin Thomas Jr., because I saw him back in a non-wing car. So.
Right. It seems like to me, Shane, and maybe I'm wrong, but maybe you'll correct me if I am wrong, but it seems like we're seeing a resurgence in 410 racing right now. Would you agree with that?
Too. Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think that is helped by the California Racing is trying to promote 410s, like up at Skagit also.
Right.
And
Dirt Cup.
The Hanford and, Peter Murphy's kind of got that deal going out there again. I think it's a good thing, because I think you're going to have, help your car count wherever you go.
Yeah. I think that a lot of it has to do with the star power in 410 racing right now. I think that, 360, the Lucas Oil ASES National Tour, as you well know, I traveled with them for 13 years.
Right.
They had a lot of star power when I first started there. Not saying that they don't have some stars there now, because they do, but it seems like we have more stars in the 410 ranks right now.
Well, I believe that too. I think it's always been that way, but I think it's also they're kind of gravitating towards the 410 because of the money.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, the money's where it's at right now in 410 racing, right?
You're probably your cost of racing is so close between those two right now.
Yeah.
But you're running for more money. So I think that's why they're leaning that way.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know if you watched the Greg Hognett Classic where Jester Marks picked up the win there at Port Royal. Did you see any of that race?
I didn't see that one.
No, you didn't. Yeah. Man, to be honest with you, do you watch any late model racing, Shane?
Yeah, I like to whenever I can.
Yeah.
I like the Lucas Oil late models, the World Outlaw late models. Both of those divisions are really good.
It seems like to me our industry is really changing as we speak. Kirk and I were doing the live pay-per-views, and we did that for 16 years. We did the Chili Bowl, and we were with the Lucas Oil ASES National Tour for 13 years. But it seems like our industry is starting to change. We saw where MAV TV is going to be working with Flow Racing now, and I think that's a – It's amazing how many races you can watch on TV right now, isn't it?
I know that. Yeah, I can't. Like I say, I can't keep up with how many they have. I was watching one the other night, and Danny Smith turned over and he got in a wreck. And I called him up later, and I said, "Man, Danny, how are you doing after that wreck?" He goes, "Well, that was in 2015." they just had it on. I thought it was tonight.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hard to identify what they're showing.
Yeah,
I wish they'd put a little cut line on there, like this is from 2015.
Right,
that
right.
That would help.
Give us a little bit of an idea when that race happened.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. They just started it up, and I was watching the whole race.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was from 2015.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you know it, but Flow Racing is going to have over 2,300 races on TV this year, and you can buy them all for $150.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. it certainly gets the people aware of what's going on. What I worry about is it helping the promoter of that racetrack sell tickets for his race?
You know what I think?
I don't know.
You know what I think about that? I think it gives the racetrack exposure, and it makes people want to go to – if they watch a race on TV and that race is exceptional, all that does is make them want to go to the races, right? If they see that racetrack and they're 3 or 4 hours from that racetrack, you know what? I think I'm going to go to that race. That was a hell of a race I just watched on TV. You can look at it either way. You can look at it as, will it keep the fans away and make them not buy tickets and make them stay home and watch it on TV? I don't think real race fans stay home when there's a big event in their town. I think people go to the races when the big event's in their town. Would you agree?
That's exactly what I hope is happening, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Shane, man, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We sure appreciate you taking the time to join us today. We'd love to have you on in the future. I hope that's a possibility. We'd love to talk to you about racing. So, yeah. Congratulations on everything in life, man. Things have been really good for you, haven't they?
They have. I've been really lucky. I got through my career without being hurt too bad, and you know, that's always a plus.
Where was your biggest?
I can remember most everything that happened.
Where was your biggest injury that you ever had?
You know, at Belleville, Kansas, I got in a really bad one. I was in Trossel's car, and the right front wheel, the hub broke off going into the corner. This is non-wing stuff.
Holy cow!
So stuck in the ground, went straight up and flat right on the cage, and folded it down. Luckily for me, I was way down in the car. You know, I'm pretty short,
right?
So that helped me. But it turned my helmet around. Everybody thought it broke my neck. I did have some compression fractures from that, and I missed a week, and we came back the next week and won the next two races.
You only took a week off.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's old school mentality right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that concussion at the Belleville was 3 days after the other concussion I had at Devil's Bowl. I was driving the 4X car for Speedy Bill. John Singer was there with me.
Yeah.
And I crashed, and he immediately took that car home, and I was out of that car.
Yeah. You know, Speedy Bill, I tell people all the time that he took Kirk and I on a private tour of his museum up there, one of the great museums in the world.
For sure.
And it was one of the most out-of-body experiences that I've ever had, walking around with Speedy Bill as he talked about each little thing that he bought over the years. Mm-hmm. Speedy Bill, there wasn't many people like Speedy Bill, was there?
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No, I did that same thing with him the first time I was up there, and it was like walking through his life with him.
It is, yeah.
And all those cars were at different periods of his life.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Shane, thanks. I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate you taking the time to do it. We'll have you on again down the road, okay, buddy?
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Shane.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, there you have it. Shane Stewart joining us. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back and wrap up the show in a moment. Stay tuned. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Jared Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back. It's Mostly Motorsports. Man, was that fun talking to Shane? I think I called him Shane Stewart at the end of the interview, didn't I? Did I say that, Austin? Did I say Shane Stewart?
You did.
I did. You know, I traveled with Shane a long time. Shane Carson, Hall of Famer, 2007 inductee. His dad was inducted in 2003. Well, that was cool, wasn't it, to hear an old-timer talk about the old days? Wasn't that cool?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Shane, but from what we've gathered through the interview, that was, seems like he's done it all and been through it all, and, you know, he's well-deserving of his spot in the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So this weekend, Austin, let's talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing this weekend. You're going to be racing up at I-80 on Friday night, so you won't be here Friday, and then you're going to race up at Knoxville on Saturday, right?
Yeah, that's the plan.
That could change.
Nah, I hope it doesn't change. We've put a lot of work this past week into getting...
How's the weather look?
Let's look. I think it looks fine for I-80, but now we've put a lot of work into getting our half-mile program better this year, and, you know, I kind of, you know, decided this year can be a kind of like an outlaw-style schedule where we go when we want to, and you know, we've had, you know, a good run at I-70 and I-80 about a month or so ago, and... You know, we figured that if we really want to get good at it, get a race on it more, so we'll go up there and see how it goes. We haven't really made a start at Knoxville yet. We tried last year and broke after qualifying, so it'll be interesting to see how we can do it in Knoxville.
Kirk might have to host the show Saturday because I think I might be up there in the motorhome. I might go up there Friday night. So I'm looking forward to seeing you race. You know what, Austin? I think that you're – I don't mean to put make this sound bad, but I think that you might be a better half-mile racer. Do you think so?
No, I agree. So, I mean, it's just I've spent 4 years on short tracks, and that's not really in anything I've raced ever been my strong suit. I mean, we've done good on them, but, you know, there's just something about
big tracks.
About big tracks, you know, it's ran in our family forever. I mean, you know, Dad was really good at I-70, which was pretty big, and then, you know, Lakeside.
0.566 was I-70 speedway.
Yeah, you know, Lakeside, the new one and the old one, were both really big, so we both, you know, he's had a lot of success there, and I bet that, you know, kind of trickled down to me, and we were really good at Lakeside and wherever else we went, but, no, I mean, it's 180 degrees different from our short track stuff, so, you know, I spend a lot of time getting good at it, and, you know, once you get good at it, you're always good at it. So I just look at Brown and the guys that race at Knoxville all the time. So it's just
your cars are kind of made for half miles, though, right?
Yeah. That's something I kind of always kind of glaze over when I think about, you know, me racing at big tracks. I mean, I got all big track cars. Then they
you buy them from Brian Brown. That's why
they all have a lot of laps at Knoxville. So
right.
No wonder we really ran that good at I-70. I think, you know, that played a lot to the equipment that we have. So, you know, hopefully that we can take some of that knowledge from I-70 and what we know about our cars and help from Brown to make our trip to Knoxville even better. But you keep seeing guys that we race with around here, you know, go up there and have good runs. So just more of an incentive for me to go up there and see how we can do against them.
Are you I hate to put you on the spot here a little bit, but you know that's what I do. Do you feel a little more confidence after you had that fourth place finish up there at I-80 and then you went at I-70 and you had that seventh place with the National Tour? Do you feel like you're a little more confident on the bigger tracks right now?
Well, I mean, you have to because, yeah. You know, I-80 was our I guess you could call Moberly a bigger track. I mean, it's a little under a half mile, but, you know, counting Lakeside and Moberly in 2020, that was our third ever race on a half mile. And then, you know, we go to I-70 and back it up with a good run too. So, you know, there's a lot more going on in the car at a half mile. You think it's probably a little calmer, but, you know, you got to deal with dirty air and keep the nose clean. And then, you know, the runs are just crazy and the speed you can carry. So, you know, I kind of experienced that at I-70 quite a bit, which is, you know, going through lap traffic. So, you know, trying to, you know, clear lap traffic and have clean air on the nose wing and then, you know, clear myself a lap car. So I react better under like higher pressure and higher speeds and where everything's kind of coming at me a little faster. Maybe that's why I feel like I succeed at it a little bit more than my short track stuff. But no, I mean, it's always good when you can go to a new track for the first time and have a fourth place and a seventh place finish against, you know, some really good cars. So yeah, I think, you know, you're definitely spot on about me having confidence and wanting to kind of, you know, carry that on a little bit longer.
It makes you look forward to getting back up to I-80, doesn't it?
A little bit. And we learned a little bit from our last trip, and I think, you know, what we learned there, and then we learned quite a bit at I-70 about our car too, and we'll go back to I-80 with a better car and hopefully, you know, have better speed to maybe where we can pick up a win or maybe a top three finish or
podium. That'd be nice.
Anything's gonna be nice for me now. Just, you know, just finishing races is really what it's all about, and just getting laps and then
not tearing up stuff.
Yeah, and then we can take, you know, what we've learned this past season and go to Knoxville and just see what it'll give us. I mean, we're not going to go there to set the world on fire, but, I mean, we're just going to go there and learn what we can and hopefully come home with a decent finish and give us some confidence to go back to Knoxville in the coming weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. How about old Matt Covington picking up that win at Boone County Raceway? Did you see that?
It was a pretty good race.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Probably the best race of the weekend.
It might have been, now that you say that. Yeah. And again, Wayne Johnson, it was another good point night for Blake Hahn because he finished a few spots in front of Wayne Johnson. Blake ran third, Wayne ran sixth. Matt won that race. Let's see where Matt is in the ASCS National Tour points. He kind of slid back there a little ways, but he's moved back. I think he fell back as far as seventh, didn't he, in the points at one point? Now he's up to fifth.
Yeah, Matt went on a string of races where he just had awful luck. He,
yeah.
he lost a win at the lake in May, and then, you know, he went down to Thunderbird the next night and wiped out a car, and then he's just kind of had some, you know, hit and miss races between that point. And it's finally good to see him pick up his first win. We don't really see, you know, Matt Covington in the middle of, or the start of July and only have one win under his belt. But, you know, I think, you know, him and Matt Howard will get their ball kind of rolling now. It's just, once you pick up one win and have, you know, a good run, it just, they start kind of just coming at you. So I think, you know, he'll definitely have a better, you know, end to his season than his start. But, yeah, it's just about being consistent, really. If he can knock out some good runs and be consistent like Jason Martin is, I think he'll be, you know, him, Wayne, Jason, and Blake will be your top four in the point standings at the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. There's only a few guys that you can really put your finger on that you think that's going to be in the championship chase at the end of the race. Hey, did you watch any late model racing this weekend by chance?
No.
You didn't?
I did not. Only late model racing I caught was the Harley-Davidson, like, 200 at South Boston, but that was pavement racing.
Right, right. I watched a little pavement racing this weekend. You know, I still love pavement racing. I still enjoy it. Do you enjoy watching pavement racing?
On the local level.
On the local level? You don't care much for it, like, at IRP or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I kind of consider that as, like, the... I should have said that differently, but, like, the local, like, you know, North Carolina racing scene, and then like the USAC, you know, pavement stuff. But yeah, anything
Bowman
besides
Gray.
Yeah, anything besides NASCAR, I mean, it just kind of has my eye more and has a better entertainment side to it, I feel like. But that can be a story for a different day.
Hey, that was kind of cool to see Tyler Reddick pick up that win at Road America, though, wasn't it? First time winner.
Yeah, at the start of the season, when we saw the first, you know, a couple of races, and we had, you know, five different winners in the first five races, I knew at some point we would hopefully get to the point where we see, 16 or 17 different winners in the Cup Series. We're at 13 now, and we're getting close to the cutoff or the end of the preseason, I guess you could call it, for NASCAR, and we're getting ready to start the playoffs. So, you know, we're three drivers away from, you know, locking out all 16 spots in the playoffs, and that would be, you know, pretty cool to see, and it just shows how good the new next-gen car is. It's really, you know, the great equalizer for a lot of these teams. We saw Michael McDowell had a really good run pretty much all day at Road America, then even Tyler Reddick picking up his first career cup win. So, you know, I think the three drivers that have not won a race were like Ryan Blaney, I think Martin Truex, and then Christopher Bell. I mean, those three drivers have won in the past couple of years of cup racing, and I think it's just a matter of time before they pick up a win before the cutoff races, and I hope to see 16 different winners, if not more, in the Cup Series by the time the playoffs start.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, I want to remind everybody, we talked about a little bit with Shane, that the track tribute to Ascot Park is still going on up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. It's going to go through October 1st, so get up there and check out that great track tribute, again, as we mentioned with Shane, that they've got video, driver uniforms, helmets, memorabilia, a lot of stuff, cars from that raced out at Ascot Park. So get up there and check it out. And don't forget about their 2020 IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette that they're going to be giving away on August 13th. That is Saturday, August 13th, during the Knoxville Nationals. Again, this is only one of 1,000. It's a limited production Corvette, and you need to get up there and purchase a raffle ticket for this Corvette. And don't forget about the 2022 XXX chassis that they're going to be giving away as well. If you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always buy a raffle ticket at SprintCarRaffle.com. That's SprintCarRaffle.com. It's a 2022 XXX chassis with a 410 motor in it. It's a turnkey, race-ready 410 sprint car, folks. And you've got a chance to win it through a raffle. Again, if you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can do it at SprintCarRaffle.com. That's SprintCarRaffle.com. Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Steve Post is going to be on with us tomorrow, I think, unless he's going to be flying. We haven't heard anything different, have we, Austin? No. So tomorrow we'll talk more about what happened this last weekend. We'll talk a little bit about some late model action as well. I want to talk about Brandon Shepherd picking up that $31,000 up there at the Freedom 60. We'll talk about that and more tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. For Austin O'Neill, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.